from the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the closing market report for the third day of March 2017. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll get a weather update for the state of Illinois from Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, and Eric Snodgrass will be here too to take a look at the growing regions across the planet. Eric, of course, is with Agrible, and we'll do all of that right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Do find us online at willag.org, and remember to buy your tickets for the all-day Ag Outlook there, too, or call this number, 800-898-1065. The all-day is next Tuesday.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Do visit our website, willag.org. There you can still buy your tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook. They're just $30 or 800-898-1065. One of the people that you'll see there among about 17 that will be up front for the day is Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, and joins us now. Thanks, Mike, for being with us, and looking forward to having you here in the great state of, well, Indiana on next week.
Let's call it Illiana. How's that?
That works, too. It'll be fun.
You both have a basketball team this year, too. That's kind of exciting as well.
Yeah. We had some good games this week. Son of
and
God.
Purdue. And you've got a great Big Ten sitting pretty going into the March Madness here, Todd.
Should be fun to watch. Hey, speaking of fun to watch, this was a wild week in Washington, D.C. And Chicago both. Tell me what happened at the CME Group.
Well, the big thing in the CME group, I think, couple different themes that we were tracking, all leading to higher closes in the grains. And I think this mainly was the foundation was built from the wheat crop conditions declining on the monthly state reports for many key states, and also the drought monitor coming out and showing a big increase in terms of swath of drought coming into southern half of Illinois, southern half of Indiana, intensifying dramatically in Oklahoma and Missouri and parts of eastern Kansas where we are. And certainly that helped. And also we had the corn planting conditions for the Delta look a lot wetter too as a weather-related fundamental that was supporting the market, Todd. And so those were in the background in the midst of this slugfest going on in Washington as related to the ethanol. And I think this probably initiated overall for the week an increase in corn buying and an increase in bean selling. That was probably magnified even more when Informa came out with a bigger Brazilian bean crop by quite a bit, 108 million tons. And the Buenos Aires Exchange came out with a quite a bit bigger Argentine crop as well, coming in just under 55 million tons. So that big hit to the crop in Argentina for soybeans about 2 months ago doesn't sound like it really was as big a hit as we were worried as far as the flood damage. So supplies look to be building. We just can't get them off the BR-163 right now.
Yeah, so we did have an up week for corn and soybeans on the weekly charts. I made note that it was an outside up week for new crop corn. That must be good news, too.
I think so. I think that's where the weather and the wheat is probably creating an environment now where the market wants to hold on to acres. And I will say this, I'll let a little bit out of the bag coming into the beef house meeting next week. If we get to next week and you and I are sitting down together with all the people at the beef house, I'll be prepared to slash my wheat carryover number pretty dramatically because of what we're looking at as far as not just precipitation in the next 6 to 7 days, but what some of these new 30-day models suggest. And if those 30-day models are correct, we're probably going to be looking at yields closer to 2014 and 2015, where it's going to be hard to get the all wheat yield above 43.5 bushels. So that would be a little under a 4-bushel cut. That would take out about 140 million bushels of ending stocks. And all of a sudden, we'd be going from 1139 this year down to 765. So I'll give you more updates on that next week. If I'm waiting to see if any of this rain that's supposed to come through in the next 5 days actually creates somewhat of a pattern shift. If it doesn't, we're warming right back up again.
So if this does, you'll find real support for the rest of the grains then too, right?
At corn especially, and I think the most intriguing thing about this week, if you look underneath the hood and underneath the surface of the price action in the charts, is that the wheat lost to the corn, and it's in large part because of what you introduced from a standpoint of the market fear and the market shorts in corn moved a lot more, and the earth underneath them shook, I think, a lot more because of some of these fundamental factors. But the wheat corn spread going back down to around 55 cents puts you back in a feed category. And if my numbers and my analysis is correct about the new crop wheat, we shouldn't stay around that 55 cents very long. We should be back towards 75 cents to a dollar heading into April, May. And that's nothing but good news for the corn market.
I made note just before we went on the air that the national newscast for the radio station was talking about the line of trucks, some 3,000 of them, along the BR-163. That's the road that runs north from Mato Grosso all the way up to the Amazon, to some of the ports, are buried in mud. I'm surprised that that made national news in the United States, but it has, and it's certainly been making news in the bean market, too.
It has. I think that's a big reason why we were able to stay up anywhere from 12 cents in the March beans to about 15 cents in the November beans. And between that and this RFS issue and how it's going to affect the biodiesel market, because biodiesel, soy oil, was really rallying sharply along with the corn market when we were talking about the Washington issues earlier this week. I will throw out a couple potentially negative features, and I think it's especially pertinent, not because I want to play the bear here in the bean market, but because we have this big USDA report. The WASDE numbers come out next Thursday. I think it's important to watch. We did see the meal, which I see as our leader overall, take out its 200-day moving average support, fail there and not be able to hold that 200-day moving average. And unlike the beans, we actually made a new 7-week low in the meal and held that 7-week low, whereas beans were able to pop back up. So I've got a warning flag in the meal market to introduce to the audience here today as we get into next week's report. I guess as I go into next week's report, it would make sense that we would see bigger soybean production numbers from USDA. So I could make a pretty strong argument, whether you're talking about the meal market, whether you're talking about the currency market, maybe more headwinds in the second half of March, Todd, unless USDA throws us some curveballs and feeds the bear a little bit on Thursday's report. So maybe for the bean hedger, now that he knows he's got 10.19 for a base price for his new crop, he keeps very close track of these next 4 or 5 days of trade.
Hey, thanks so much. Looking forward to having you at the Beef House next Tuesday.
Same here. Can't wait, Todd. Thank you.
Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, and will join us at the Beef House next Tuesday. You can too. willag.org, willag.org, or 800-898-1065. To buy your tickets, the cost is just $30. In today's agricultural news, President Trump's pick for Ag Secretary is still delayed. This despite predictions Sonny Perdue's nomination would be moving along readily. The Senate has already confirmed some 16 Trump cabinet nominees, yet agriculture is not one of them. CBS Radio reported Thursday President Trump's pick to head USDA is stalled because the White House still has not submitted his paperwork. Others, such as Ag Senator and Republican Chuck Grassley from Iowa, suggest the nomination's just delayed.
The problem that I've been told is getting his papers and business in order so he meets all the requirements of ethics, because he's deeply involved in different businesses that would be considered a conflict, and he wants to make sure those conflicts are taken care of.
The executive director for the American Farm Bureau Federation, Dale Moore, says over 1,100 Farm Bureau members met in D.C. this past week with lawmakers and agency officials to talk about ag issues.
Yes, we are anxious. Yes, we are concerned at the amount of time it's taking. And we're certainly hopeful that Governor Perdue's confirmation paperwork will get to the Senate Ag Committee so they can begin their work. And we know that the Senate Ag Committee, Chairman Roberts, Ranking Member Stabenow, are ready to get to work on that.
Moore says none of the AFBF members he spoke with were frustrated or angry, but just concerned and anxious to get the Secretary of Agriculture in place. Moore points out Perdue and the Ag Committee would then have to fill 13 USDA sub-cabinet posts. The sooner Perdue's confirmed, the sooner Moore says Perdue can start that work. And part of that work, of course, will be putting together a brand new farm bill. Ag groups and farm state lawmakers are already making the case for more funding in the next farm bill due to the current state of the farm economy. However, groups like the Heritage Foundation, the Environmental Working Group, and Taxpayers for Common Sense gave testimony this week against the idea of more funding. Politico's Morning Ag Report says the groups were on Capitol Hill this week arguing that the downturn in what is typically a cyclical economy is not a reason to maintain the status quo on the farm policies. The three groups' biggest criticism of the farm bill are the subsidies. The next farm bill shouldn't be based on a snapshot in time. Congress didn't do that in 2014, because if they had, the farm bill wouldn't have been so generous, says Darren Bask, Heritage Foundation Research Fellow. Scott Faber, Vice President of Governmental Affairs for EWG, says subsidies incentivize farmers to plant certain crops rather than respond to market conditions. Rather than invest in agricultural subsidies, Faber says the U.S. should invest in education, infrastructure, and health care for the rural economy. Well, a former manager in the Environmental Protection Agency's pesticide division may have to testify in court about an alleged role in helping Monsanto suppress inquiries about whether or not Roundup weed killer can potentially cause cancer. Jess Rowland is the official who's become an important figure in over 20 lawsuits. Monsanto is accused of not warning consumers and regulators that its glyphosate-based weed killer can potentially cause non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. A federal judge said Monday that he's leaning toward making Rowland submit to questioning from the plaintiff's lawyers. And finally today, South Dakota Republican Senator John Thune is introducing a measure designed to give producers another conservation option in the upcoming 2018 Farm Bill. He's calling it the Soil Health and Income Protection Program, or SHIP. An AgWeb.com article says this is a voluntary program to address soil health and less productive farming areas. The SHIP proposal is a shorter conservation program than the normal conservation reserve program. To participate, farmers would have to commit a maximum of 15% of their least productive acreage for 3 to 5 years. It's a shorter time commitment than the 10 to 15 years required for CRP. Having a program like this that's 3 to 5 years in duration satisfies a lot of requirements that farmers are frustrated with regarding the CRP program, Thune says. He says it would be a good opportunity for farmers to get income off their least productive lands and give them a chance to plant crops on it again if commodity prices improve. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Tuesday next week, don't forget the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Tickets are available still, $30, willag.org, 800-898-1065. One of the people you'll see there is Eric Snodgrass from Agrible. He's on the line right now to talk us about the weather forecast for the day. Hey, Eric, thanks for being with us. Thanks for doing next week, too. Let's jump right into this. I want to recap kind of the severe weather we had here in Illinois and across the nation earlier in the week.
Yeah, one of the things we've been watching at Agrible since actually last November was the return for 2017 toward a more active severe weather season. And certainly January and February have played out to that forecast quite well. Well, essentially, getting back into earlier part of this week, we had some really strong, what we call warm air advection. That's where you just bring up a lot of warmth and humidity from the south. The atmosphere destabilized, and we really set things up to produce some strong storms. And those storms began to rotate because we also had some pretty strong wind shear. So as a meteorologist, those are the ingredients I'm always looking for. So listen, when this thing was all said and done, the numbers were actually quite staggering. We had, after they filtered out all the double reports, we actually had over 1,000 reports of severe weather, that coming from winds over 58 miles an hour, hail bigger than an inch, and tornadoes. Okay, combined all together, over 1,000 reports on February 28th and March 1st. And it covered basically, you know, a big chunk of the United States from the Midwest all the way to the Southeast. So that added actually 65 more tornado reports, which puts us way above trend, way above average on tornado reports. So we've had a very active year. And I'm just going to say this, I don't see any reason to see this, you know, above average activity with severe weather slowing down as we get into the real severe weather season, which is really April, May, and June. So something for everyone to just to keep in mind as we get into planting time here.
What's our short-term forecast look like?
Yeah, well, we have some warmth returning. Yeah, we got the sun out today on Friday. It feels pretty good, but it's still kind of cold. But we do have a ridge building into the system that's going to bring us, you know, right around here in Champaign, way up into the 50s tomorrow, maybe even the 60s by Sunday and into Monday. But it's Monday where things get a little dicey. We have a large low pressure system that's going to go through parts of the Dakotas into Minnesota, dump a lot of snow on parts of the Dakotas before this thing heads on off to the Hudson. Now, us being so far south of this, we're going to have a cold front that does get dragged through the area, and that's going to bring some precip. And that's really what I want to talk about. It's the precipitation. You see, we actually had on Thursday this week, we had the release of the new U.S. drought monitor map. And I'm looking at it right now, and I'm going to tell you, the drought that was in Arkansas and parts of Oklahoma and parts of Missouri really has spread over the last 30 days. And so right now, the southern half of Illinois, even parts of Indiana, southern half of Indiana, we're now in what we call D0 stage drought. That's where we've been abnormally dry. Now, it's not going to be too big of an impact right now, but this is something that I have been focusing on and been saying, we got to watch this. Basically, that region, let's call it Missouri, southern half of Illinois, and parts of Indiana, that region has really received over the last month about an inch of rain, which is less than half of what we would want. In some cases, less than a third of what we would want. So this is something I'm watching very, very closely. Now, we could have an April system that comes through and drops a ton of rain on this and completely erase it. But we have seen the persistence in the development of that drought over the last 60 days. So I got to keep an eye on it. It's something very important to be watching.
Switch to South America. How are conditions there for their safrinha or second corn crop?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, things are going really, really well. We've not seen major temperature stresses. We've not seen anything in terms of too much rainfall across a widespread area. You know, I think South America is going to have a banner year, both with their first crop and the safrinha crop. There's just no big signs that say, hey, look out. Things are going to get hit hard.
Can I come back to one other thing that I think we probably ought to mention? We've heard this talked about before, El Nino. Where do we stand today?
Yeah, so we had a very weak La Nina all winter, and it really wasn't a dominant driver of our weather. When you think about El Nino, La Nina, it's usually a winter phenomenon that's going to impact U.S. weather. Right now, that La Nina has faded very quickly, and we have El Nino conditions that's warmer than normal sea surface temperatures already building off the west coast of South America. Some of the long-range projections have El Nino conditions kind of going, you know, full strength here by the time we get into the beginning of summer, maybe even by late spring. So that's where those sea surface temperatures are above a half to maybe 0.8 degrees Celsius above average. And that means some interesting things, more interesting for our fall and winter. But with another El Nino event building in the central part of the Pacific Ocean, we have to watch out for that, because while the summer correlations with El Nino are very weak, fall and next winter are significant. So South America, while they're having a great crop this year, if we have another El Nino event building in for them for next winter, those northern growing regions may struggle a bit with their production, while as this year, they're going fantastic.
I am so looking forward to your presentation next Tuesday over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Can't wait to see you there. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you. I'm looking forward to it as well.
That's Eric Snodgrass from Agrible, and he will kick off the all-day Ag Outlook next Tuesday. You can still buy your tickets online, willag.org, willag.org.